1210 here at WGN Radio. I'm Elise Kling, sitting in for John Williams for the Wintrust Business Lunch. You can find me online and information about my fintech company at bestmoneymoves.com. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn. I encourage it. And if you've got questions about money and real estate, you can go to thinklink.com or you can just call us. You can call us right here at the station, 312-981-7200, and we will take your call. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. We've had such a great show the last 3 hours talking about everything from, you know, the $600 stimulus that may be going away to, you know, what you can do to make money with side hustles. And in a moment or two, we're going to have John Najarian come on and talk about this crazy stock market. And let's just talk about that for a moment, because I have been watching the stock market take a wild ride the last couple of days. Yesterday and today, we've seen just kind of wide gyrations, definitely trending up. The market is up, I don't know, well over 500 points at the moment. We saw it down 300 points. We saw it up higher than that. Yesterday was a big roller coaster as well. John will talk to all of that, and we've got some questions for him about it. But we're also seeing market movers and come into play from the Fed. You know, basically the Fed has said, we'll buy it all. You know, bring us your corporate debt. Bring us your, I don't know, junk bonds. All of these different things that the Fed is doing to support the economy and not let the economy tank. They just don't want to do it. And while they're saying, bring us all your bonds, you know, at the same time, they're talking about how there are tremendous risks in the economy. The IMF, International Monetary Fund, also today announced that there is a grave crisis ahead. It is unlike, quote, unlike the world has ever seen. And so on the one hand, we've got, you know, a bounce back beginning here in this country. You've got the International Monetary Fund raising the alarm. There's a lot of mixed messages out there. And if you don't know which way to go, the good news is we've got some answers for you. So 312-981-7200. We would love to talk to you in a little bit on the show. All right. And we are back. It is 17 minutes past 12, lunchtime for everybody out there. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Kling, sitting in for John Williams this week. So much fun. Having a great time. John Najarian joins us on the line right now. John is the founder of MarketRebellion.com, a financial news, education, and subscription site. Hey, John.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, very nice to have you again, as always. So, lot of business news today. The market is absolutely going crazy after the record jump in retail sales. We were talking earlier on the show, I don't know if you caught it, about what people are buying. Somebody said they bought a swimming pool. I know those are in short supply. What are you seeing happen in the market today?
Yeah, well, one of the major questions that had been asked was, when you reopen, will they spend? Will they come? And as parts of the economy are opening, the answer is enthusiastically, yes, they will. They will spend. We, I should probably say, will spend. This is an endorsement of how good the economy was prior to the shutdown. And then if you basically take us and put us indoors for 2 or 3 months, like many of us had to endure, we are likely to get out there and really take advantage of the opportunities to enjoy ourselves a little bit. For some people, that's retail spending. For others, it was part of the retail numbers, but it might be something they needed, like a car. I doubt if that's just an impulse purchase as much, but sales of automobiles were substantial in this report as well. And a lot of big ticket items, not just clothing, which exploded to the upside, but a lot of other things were also accumulated by Americans across the country in the last month.
So it's interesting, John, because I wonder how much of this is pent up versus going to be sustainable demand. And I mean that with cars. You know, for 3 months, the spring is the big leasing month. That's when all the leases end. And literally no dealers wanted the cars back and nobody wanted to go to the dealers to turn them back. And so that all got pushed. Any car sales that you would have had got pushed. You know, you've got clothing. Somebody pointed out earlier, well, where did you think all the 5 millions of pounds of flour that people were buying went? It went to our wastes. People are buying clothes because they don't fit into their clothes. But if you've got still 20 million people in continuing unemployment claims, and you're cutting down on the $600 extra weekly that's going into that unemployment amount, how much sustained buying can you really do?
Well, and that's a great question. That we won't know until probably the end of August, if indeed the $600 additional from the Fed, that's of course supplemental to what the states provide, which is give or take $450 per week, if that goes away, it goes away the end of July. So the last checks people would get would probably be in that first or second week in July, yep. or in August, rather. And thus, we'll have an answer to that at that point if there's no continuation of it. Certainly, the Fed chairman didn't seem to think that he wasn't pounding the table for that today in his testimony before Congress. And it didn't seem like Congress was just jumping up and down saying we have to have this. Some members were a little more aggressive than others with the Fed chair as far as what they thought their constituents needed. But I don't know that another $600 a week extension is in the offing, at least yet. Based on these numbers, I'd say it has less of a chance than more of a chance.
I agree. I don't necessarily think it's in the offing. My concern is that 20 million people filing continuing unemployment claims, and you're seeing unemployment continue to be there for an increase from state and local governments. You're seeing retail companies still going, you know, firing people and laying people off. You're still hearing about unemployment. So I'm just wondering if you think that the market's getting a little bit ahead of itself in this, you know, rush on every single bit of good news, combined with, and while you say the Fed's not pounding the table for it, they are out there on the one hand saying we're not going to let this economy crash and burn, and we definitely are having, you know, issues with, you know, we definitely see big risks. But then on the other side, he says he doesn't, you know, Jerome Powell says, well, I don't want the Fed to run through the bull market like an elephant. Now, what the heck does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Jerome Powell and the Fed, members of the Fed Open Markets Committee, have been doing what they can to augment what Congress did. And what our various administrations, state by state across the country, have done, keeping it locked down. I bet you and I would have a similar view of what that lockdown would result in if indeed you don't have revenue outside of Seamless and Grubhub and Uber Eats and the likes of all those food delivery services when everybody's locked down. There is precious little else, except for the essentials, I guess, of construction that was going on as far as commerce. That
sure.
means people, that not just people, but governments, state and local governments, run out of money. As Margaret Thatcher said, eventually you run out of other people's money. And in this case, they don't have that money coming in, except from, like I say, taxes on those food delivery companies and on in particular, the home and construction sites like Lowe's and Home Depot, which, by the way, put up gangbuster numbers. But because the people that go there and were building homes or helping people remodel homes are deemed essential. So I think that Jerome Powell he's not the one, of course, that cuts the $600 check. That's the Congress that put the bill before the president now. And we'll see whether or not the next bill that goes before the president has anything like that in it.
Well, I think my husband going to Home Depot like four times in the last month might have helped just a little bit, but, you know.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely he did.
right. And my flower planting as well. But, you know, looking at the pieces of this puzzle, John, it's confusing to me. When I see stock market numbers like already back at 26,000, as if we're back to where we were in January. I mean, that was the number. Weren't we around there in January, 26,000?
Yeah. In fact, the February highs, well, for the year, you're exactly right. January was probably right around that 26,000 level. And then we moved through that and, you know, moved all the way up to the 29,000 level. But that sell-off, that horrible sell-off that took us down March 23rd to 18,000 and threatening even to break that, we have climbed back significantly from the depths of that sell-off. And I think the reason is, of course, in the case of the S&P, because it's capitalization-weighted index.
Yep.
So the stocks that have done the best, turns out all of those stocks, all of them, are COVID plays. I mean, from Microsoft, which is the third largest stock, Amazon, which is the second largest stock, and Apple, which is the largest stock. Throw Google and some of these others in there, Facebook, none of which require face-to-face for them to be able to make the money that they made. And those are the ones that drove the S&P 500.
So in the last 2 minutes, just give us a very brief look at the rest of the market, because the last time I looked, about 75% of all the companies listed on these stock markets are not doing great.
Yeah, I mean, and again, it's the usual suspects. It's the so-called epicenter stocks that are not doing well. Now, they are recovering today because the idea that Americans might go out and spend is great for the airlines, which are, of course, many of the investors worried that, oh, my gosh, will people ever get on airplanes again? The answer, of course, is yes. The question is when. But airlines are up substantially today. But they were down last week on that big drop. I think the airline index fell by over 20% in a single day.
Yeah.
So restaurants, hospitality, hoteliers, cruise lines, airlines, those are epicenter. Those are the ones that people have to actually go out and go into or on for them to make money. And you could also throw, I guess, travel agencies like TripAdvisor and Expedia and so forth into that mix. But the fact that those are all coming back now means that we're likely to see more money spent as America reopens, rather than so much trepidation that so many in the media were really touting that, oh, Americans won't go back out and spend like they did. I think this is an answer, yes, they will.
John Najarian is founder of MarketRebellion.com, a financial news education and subscription site. Hey, John, thank you so much for being with us today.
It is my pleasure. Thanks. Enjoy listening to you.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon. 312-981-7200 is our number here in the studio. In the next segment, after we get to news, I'm going to take your questions about the money, the craziness going on with the Fed, real estate, what's going on with real estate locally. Net 312-981-7200. If you just want to sound off on the $600 or you're worried about your kid getting a job, you can give me a call here at the Wintrust Business Lunch. Elise Kling sitting in for John Williams here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. So here comes all of the stuff, the answers to your questions. 312-981-7200. We're talking today about money, real estate, personal finance. We have also talked about kids not having money, $600 extra a week that the government has been paying and will pay through July 31st. And now thinking about moving to a $450 one-time payment. Not clear if that's if you get a job or if you don't get a job. If it's supposed to be this return to work bonus. What that's going to look like, I don't think Larry Kudlow, who's the one talking about it today, knows. I don't think Congress knows. Congress isn't really asking for the $600 a week extension. Nothing seems to be moving forward. But, you know, happy to take your calls. I do want to talk just for a moment while we're waiting for you to call in. Again, 312-981-7200. I want to talk for a moment about how I think this could play out, because, you know, the thing about recessions, and if you think about where we were 12 years ago with the Great Recession, it was the worst that any of us up until that point had ever experienced. It was relatively short. It was about a year and a half in length, but it extended out. It had a terrible re-employment rate. It took a long time to kind of get the economy going again. People who lived through those years suffered tremendously. We saw baby boomers who 12 years ago were sort of in their, you know, height of their earning. They were in their 50s, the oldest parts of them. And, you know, they were really trying to make ends meet, trying to find new jobs. This was the, these were the years that they were supposed to be really putting away, socking away money for retirement. And instead, they found themselves liquidating 401ks. And they liquidated those. They paid penalties on it in some cases. It really contributed to where we are today, which is seeing five generations in the workforce. In Best Money Moves, which is my financial wellness technology company, we, you know, look a lot at generations and how generations experience financial stress. And what we saw over the last, you know, 10, 12 years, you know, as I've been in this, as you know, because it's my work as a financial journalist, I've been doing this work for decades. But, you know, as you look over where baby boomers were the last 10 years and how long it took to recover and how they never, many of them never even really recovered, never really found new jobs, you realize how devastating that was. And for the millennials, who are really the hardest hit generation, like, say what you like about millennials, but they graduated from college right into the Great Recession, and here they are now with the second worst horrible economic situation, you know, in their very short work lives. And we're clearly now, you know, challenging norms of the Great Depression, even though we seem to be bouncing back, as I just talked with John Najarian about. We still have 21 million and a half people who are filing continuing unemployment claims. We'll see what this week's number looks like. But if you just go to the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis and, you know, you look at the FRED research, as we call it, what you see is that these continuing claims numbers are the true measure of unemployment. And it isn't just that everybody's waiting for their extra $600 a week and they're not going to go get a job afterwards. The number of people who are leaving, voluntarily leaving jobs, and that happens, right? You decide you want to move to the West Coast, or you decide you're going to move to somewhere else, or you know, you get a job offer and you leave your job to go take something else. That number has dropped to an extremely low level. People voluntarily separating from their jobs. Why? Because they don't have jobs to go to. And if you look at the number of jobs being advertised, there aren't 20 million jobs out there, and we just have to match everybody up. Sometimes I think that people in Washington think that that's how it works. Like, there's some big job matcher out there, and they take jobs from over here and they match them with jobs over here. But, well, we've talked about how skills can be, people can reskill, right? You take the skills you have. We talked about this yesterday, right? You take the skills that you have and you reapply them to a different job. Right. So maybe you could be you were a bartender and now you're going to be a contact tracer. OK, that's great if that works. But it's not like there are 20 million jobs out there just waiting for people to raise their hand and say, I'll take that one. No, I want this one over here. It's just not how it works. Those jobs aren't available. And so what happens if, let's say, there are 5 or 6 million jobs out there right now, which is, I actually think, I haven't looked in a few days, but I think that might be around the number. You have 21 million people unemployed and 6 million jobs available. That isn't a good fit. There are 15, that would leave, at the very best of it, 15 million people filing continuing claims plus the other people who are filing unemployment claims. And so these are really interesting times. And so millennials now are facing their second round of this. We have Gen Z that's just graduating into this marketplace. We talked about how people are getting jobs pulled, internships are canceled, you know, jobs are delayed for some people, those in the very best of cases. These are really tough times, and I have a hard time understanding how we're just all going to come out of this magical. It's like magical thinking for everybody. But maybe, hey, it's just me. 312-981-7200. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. It's really an interesting commentary about the millennials and the struggles they face. And I have two kids, and I feel sorry for them because they're facing everything you just mentioned. So one of the questions or things that I was always wondering about, and I wonder why a politician or a presidential, you know, Bernie wanted to give everything away for free. But I was wondering why they couldn't make it reasonable on student loans that the government would just charge students 1 point above prime as an interest rate. I mean, we want them to go to school and get better and be our future, but yet we're penalizing them and killing them because they're so downloaded with so much student debt, $100,000 in debt for going to college. And it's just, there's no way they can ever pay that off. It's a mortgage.
I mean, it's the government's making money on the loans, right?
But it isn't right.
No.
Because if we're sitting here trying to tell our kids, go to college, make yourself better, be the future, and then we're penalizing them for having done so. You know, we just recently sold our house, and the people who took out a mortgage, they took out a $400,000 mortgage and put only about $30,000 down on the house. How are they going to do that? How do these people survive?
It is, this is part, Andrew, this is such a great question, and I really appreciate you asking it, because it opens up this conversation of how do you have people who are, you know, so many people earning money but living paycheck to paycheck. And part of the reason is they're funding these $100,000 student loans, which is basically another mortgage. Then they've got their mortgage. Now they're saving for their kids' college tuition. They've got two cars, and those have loans. And their credit card debt is up the wazoo. And so when you have all of this different, you know, these different priorities, let's say, and on top of that, you know, companies have shifted the cost of medical care basically to their employees in the way of raising the deductibles and increasing the amounts that they have to pay from their paycheck for it. These are very serious questions. And yes, I think the government should provide low-cost loans to everybody. And even if they did it at 4%, they'd still make money. Why that didn't happen, where in the Great Recession, they didn't just say to everybody who had a federal student loan or any loan, we'll refinance you. Bring us your private student loans and we'll just take those 8% loans and we'll refinance it for 4%. And that was an idea that was floated and never passed. But it should have passed because it was the smart thing to do. The problem is that all the private lenders out there have their hands in everybody's pockets and they're making their own contributions. And so their voices are getting heard. And it's really the voices of students who are not getting heard. I really appreciate your call. 312-981-7200, or you can text us, and we have some comments from 815. Hello, please keep in mind the events industry is not coming back to work as quickly as everyone else. $923 million will be lost in the second quarter at McCormick Place alone. Included in the people getting the extra up to $600 a week, it's not a blanket $600, are the people off and possibly not returning to work until January or later, thanks to everyone at WGN for the excellent content. Thank you so much for that. Yes, the events industry is in terrible shape. And just for my own example, you know, I attend, I want to say, maybe 10 conferences a year. I go to Las Vegas 5 times a year, and I've gone to McCormick Place many, many times over the years, mostly for the International Home and Houseware Show, which this year was one of the very first ones to get canceled. And what's going on is terrible. Remember, every loss of these kinds of conferences, you know, I don't go to Las Vegas, the airline loses some money. I've got 4 nights of a hotel room for me and maybe even one or two of my employees. Then we buy a booth, so that's more money for them. That's all the people servicing those contracts. The Starbucks that makes us the coffee at 6 a.m. when we have to get to a morning meeting, everybody loses. From 224, I collect unemployment for a few weeks, called back to work, was making more on unemployment and wondering how much the taxes will be on that. So for 224, you know, you probably won't end up paying more in taxes simply because what you were earning, well, you said you were making, it was more than what you were earning. But my guess is it's all going to balance out. But you can change your withholding once you go back to work full time and withhold just a little bit extra money. And then you should come out okay at the end of the year. More comments coming in. Please keep them coming and we'll try and fit them in as we can. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. U.S. News and World Report is out with its list of the top 10 children's hospitals in the country. And Lurie Children's Hospital again fell short of making the cut. That's the second year in a row. It had been on an eight-year run. McDonald's sales are gradually improving as more of its restaurants open up around the world. Same-store sales were down 21% in May. That's better than April when they were down 39%. And Miguel Patricio of Kraft Heinz is the highest paid CEO in Chicago. That's according to Cranes. He has a total compensation package of over $43 million. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Orion, what about agribiz?
Not quite as good as Wall Street from the standpoint of up or down. The July wheat contract currently down 9¾ cents a bushel at 4.95. The July corn contract is down a quarter of a penny at $3.29¼ a bushel. And July soybeans trading down a penny and a half at $8.67½. Turning to livestock trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the July lean hog contract down $3.15 a hundredweight, $49.12. The June live cattle contract is down 15 cents at $95.92, and the August feeder cattle contract is up $1.77 at $132.95. Weekly crop planting progress report out yesterday afternoon shows we're pretty well finished with corn and soybeans. 95% of the nation's corn acres had been planted as of Sunday night. 93% of the nation's soybean acres had been planted as of Sunday night. And in the good to excellent condition report, Illinois 63%, Indiana 66%, Iowa 83%, and Wisconsin, with its corn crop, ranked 82%, good to excellent. A phone press conference with Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley today said the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has not yet taken action on petitions by refiners seeking retroactive biofuel blending waivers. The Iowa senator called on the EPA to reject such petitions in a weekly call with reporters. The senator said the petitions were an attempt to skirt a Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals decision earlier this year that said waivers from the nation's biofuel blending laws granted to small refineries after 2010 had taken the form of an extension. And again, the fight between the petroleum industry and the corn soybean industry continues between farmers and the fuel industry. And in case you missed it, both state fairs in Illinois have been canceled. They were canceled over the weekend. The Illinois State Fair at Springfield and the DuQuoin State Fair at DuQuoin, Illinois, both canceled for this year, or as they like to say, postponed it, postponed until next year. That's your money on 720 WGN.
It's 12:51. On the Wintrust Business Lunch, I'm Elise Klink, sitting in for John this week. I'll be here the rest of the week, well, till Thursday anyway, which is so fun. You can find me at bestmoneymoves.com, LinkedIn, thinklink.com, twitter.com, and you can find Amy Guth, WGN reporter, right here, right now. So, Amy, America just had this huge surge in retail sales. We've been talking about it throughout the whole show. It's caused the stock market to go on a wild ride up. You say it's not the full story. Why? Amy, why can't I hear you?
Uh-oh, you can't hear me?
There we go.
How about now?
Now I can hear you.
There we go. There, I have to wait for that bell. Okay,
yeah.
So, you know, there's a couple of reasons I think it's important to kind of be cautious. One of those is a lot of this spending is propped up by some stimulus efforts. So we have to take that into consideration. Although that wasn't a huge amount of money, it was something. So to some budgets, that might have been extra income. Also, that could be short-lived, and I think a lot of experts are kind of cautioning that as we're seeing these numbers about how much retail was up in May, is that, hey, this could be a really short-lived surge, you know, depending on what happens with the second wave of the virus. And so I think it's a little bit of, hey, this is really good news, but let's not just, you know, let's not open champagne just yet. There's still a lot of factors we need to keep watching in the months ahead before we say, hey, here's this recovery. You know, in this moment where up to 4,000 retailers say they will probably permanently close at this point, it's an interesting moment for retail, right? Because already, way pre-pandemic, they were feeling the stress of e-commerce. They were really, really getting a lot of pain from retailers like Amazon and Walmart.com, who really dominate that space a lot. A lot of these brick and mortar stores were really, really hurting from that. So I think we have to kind of temper that optimism with a little bit of we have to wait and see, which has kind of been a theme, I think, of 2020 so far, is there's been a lot of wait and see, but I think this is another one of those moments.
Yeah, I agree. And we should point out that as good as the May retail sales were, it was still over 6% below last year. So to your point, my champagne is sitting in the refrigerator. So United Airlines today vowed to ban passengers who refuse to wear masks. In my mind, this is the latest thing that airlines are trying to do to get me to come on board. But I have, I don't know, I want you to talk a little bit about that, but I am just, you know, really nervous that American and United refuse to keep some seats empty, whereas Delta and Southwest have seemed to have no problems doing it and making the numbers work. But first, what about these masks?
Yeah, I think this is really interesting. So there's a trade group called Airlines for America, and they're working with a lot of different airlines. And one of the conversations they're having with them is, what are we doing to enforce this and to make passengers feel comfortable entertaining the idea of getting on a plane again? So they're backing up airlines, but really, really stressing that all the airlines need to kind of make their own structure for what that's going to look like. And that could include United's plan for having an internal kind of a do not fly list. And it's a temporary thing pending an internal review. But essentially, if you have a United ticket and you go and you say, nope, no way, I'm not wearing a mask, you can't make me do it, they will try to restrict you for a period of time, saying, you know, hey, we have to look out for the safety of others, for the safety of our workers, things like that. On the other end of that spectrum, you know, American's move I thought was really interesting, and that is they're advising flight attendants to very discreetly address passengers that who are not wearing a face mask and who are not covered by any exceptions, but like small children, anyone with a disability or anything like that, that would prevent them from wearing a mask. You know, and then encouraging flight attendants to de-escalate any issues with other passengers who are frustrated by that. To me, those are vastly different things. If you imagine sitting on a plane or at the gate, maybe getting ready to board a plane, someone's not wearing a mask and refuses to do so, United's going to go, okay, well, you're not flying, whereas American might, you know, discreetly try to calm you down and, you know, try to handle your concerns. If you're like, hey, this passenger is coughing everywhere, not wearing a mask, I'm nervous about it, I'm not feeling good. Vastly different things. But this trade group is kind of trying to back all of that up and trying to get a little more messaging around that, encourage all the airlines to do more messaging for exactly the reason you said, because they're trying to help assure passengers that it's safe to fly and things like that. Now, some of the airlines are looking at putting space between travelers so that you're not necessarily right next to a stranger who you don't know their health condition and they don't know yours. So it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, I talked about this with John previously of, you know, 2021 has the potential to really have a lot of interesting narratives to it around the travel industry as it's coming back and trying to recover some of that lost ground of like what's going to look like. I think for passengers, that might end up being, once people are comfortable flying again at high numbers, that might translate into really interesting, you know, switches and shifts in the travel industry of how we fly, what the price point is, things like that.
We're just going to have to see, though, Amy, because I got to tell you, I'm not really, I don't feel comfortable. And I think there are a lot of people out here who just want everybody to wear a mask and get over yourself.
Yep.
You know, that's just it.
You know, I was talking to a travel writer recently who said, I'm not getting on a plane anytime soon unless it's a private plane.
Right.
I'm like, I agree.
Right.
You know, we all, different crowds feel so differently. So the president just had a White House Rose Garden ceremony, right? And I'm watching the crowd, and I won't name names, but I'm watching the crowd in the waiting for the president or talking after he left. And they're not just shaking hands. They're putting their arms around each other. I saw one guy whispering in another guy's ear. You know, I mean, so it's like different parts of the world are treating this completely differently. I really was kind of shocked by what I was seeing.
Yeah, it is really interesting. Amy Guth, thank you so much for being with us today. Amy is the WGN reporter, and she's here all the time to talk about all the best news.